One more week. You can bring Ruthie with you next week. It's the grand finale.
Next week's the last week?
The last two lectures, yeah. Yeah, well, you see, everyone is, you'll understand yourself already. I've never taught after Shavuot, but this year I'm making an exception because it's so early. But, you fellas have responsibility, decisions. It's very hard for me. You don't even start to understand. I've taught so many giants over the years in the Kollel, and then they disappear. And they don't change the world. I mean, some do, but I have others. In Toronto alone, I have some of the greatest Talmudim I've ever taught. And I don't see Toronto shaking. Faket, I see Machlokes and Rabbi Miller. And, I don't have to tell you. Torah in motion, what is it called?
Yeah.
Baruch Hashem. Jay. It's a character. Your uncle is a character. Your other uncle is quieter. He's What? Baby Baruch Hashem, Mazal Tov. How many is there? Number three. Can I, he married late? Can I? Everybody caught up. All right, I'm ready to go. Today's a fascinating shiur. First of all, let me begin. Today is Monday, the 13th of May, 2013. It's the second of Yemei Hagbalah. And we approach a very big chag just hours from now. I want to say hello to everyone in front of me, to those that are listening. And you see, had the merger worked out, the whole world would be different. The merger did not work out. And I started to show you the implications once what you call YUI, again, to be technical, it's Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. But you call it YU, I call it YU, but YU doesn't exist until 1945. But once the merger doesn't work out, then of course you have Yeshiva and Yeshiva College on one side, the seminary on the other side. And the results are very far-reaching. And when you talk about Yeshiva, we spoke about the difficulties. Honoring Albert Einstein is a classic issue. How do you resolve that? I don't know if there's a resolution. When we're young, I see you fellas expect the resolution of what's going on at the Kollel. We spoke about it yesterday. You know, everyone here is upset. Friday morning, some of the fellas were at the Kollel with their wives. I wouldn't let my wife go. My wife has a minute to go every Rosh Chodesh, but I said this Rosh Chodesh, I'll be there in the afternoon. It'll be quiet. The morning, who knows what can happen. But not everything has an immediate resolution or a resolution at all. And this is a question you have to think about. How do you relate to Einstein? And Isaac's critique of Rabbi Revel is very, very profound. You're giving him a degree, Doctor of Humane Letters. It's one thing to give someone an honorary degree as a physicist, a mathematician, a Jewish historian, but a Doctor of Humane Letters is saying Kizera Eva Kadesh. All right, it's a delicate problem. The problem I dealt with last week, I want to come back to for a moment and once again touch upon it. You see, Yeshiva has the scandal. And this tremendous question remains, why did Rabbi Revel let the Dr. Sapphire, as we knew him, remain in the high school and threw him out of the college? So I was Melamed Zchut on Rabbi Revel, and I spoke about Hakarat HaTov, which is very important, and again, we're only human beings. And I know with the Rav, part of his personality, if anyone did him a favor, he was in debt to that person. And at times, someone can do you a favor, and then you have to smack his face. The Rav was incapable of doing that. I think Rabbi Revel was incapable. I also want to add another thought that I didn't say last week, but I discussed it with Malcolm. Malcolm, by the way, disagrees with me. My wife and I have discussed this issue 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago. She feels very strongly that once this fiasco happened, Rabbi Revel should have fired Dr. Sapphire altogether. But I'll tell you, the Commentator, which was the college newspaper, that commentator, when you go back and see the issues in the 32, 33, 34, 35, you will see time and again innuendos or direct critique of Shelley Sapphire and Rabbi Revel. And the commentator literally made it impossible for Rabbi Revel to keep Dr. Sapphire in his position. So it's something to think about. Am I right? Is Malka right? These are live situations. It's sad. But I want to add one postscript, which I didn't stress last week, and I should have. Look where we're at today, that everyone blamed those that were opposed to yeshiva and yeshiva college, that you could have a scandal that a dean of the college, you bring in secular people, you bring in irreligious people, and you can have an affair between an eshadish and a dean of the college, and everyone is criticizing, and the commentator is criticizing. Now you just think where we're at today. Number one, from one point of view, if this would happen in Yeshiva University today, no one would say, boo, it's a tremendous yeshiva, you have endless secretaries. Half the secretaries are not even Jewish, right or wrong. I've been in YU, I've seen some, they're very nice, they're wonderful, they're lovely. They're not even Jewish. Danny, the offices, when you go into an office, you don't feel you're walking into a Makom Torah. It's a total college, a university. All right, in the Beis Medrash, you have a Makom Torah. The other side of the coin, which distresses me 1,000 times more, 70, 80 years ago, no one could conceive that in a yeshiva there would be a scandal like this. Now you just think what we're up against today in the year 2014. Ein bayit asher ein shem met. I don't care where you turn. Sakma, YU, Israel, our problems here in our world, the pedophiles, the Berlin, what's going on in Breslov today, London, go right down the line. So it's a sad commentary. 80, 70 years ago, they couldn't conceive of it. Today, unfortunately, zil kri beit afel. Okay, now, the fact that there wasn't the merger affects the seminary as well. Had there been a merger, there's no doubt in my mind that conservative Judaism would not have developed the way it did, not have developed so quickly, not had ultimately left the halachic framework. They would have made many compromises to keep the unity. And this is what I showed you from the archives, and I thank the Hebrew Union College, which really was amazing how they made everything available to me, and no charge, and Xeroxed everything, and I remember getting big packets with information. And you see, archives basically don't lie. People, it's not that we lie willingly, but we have a defense mechanism. No one wants to admit he's a shagetz. No one wants to admit he's a noisfaf. So we'll double talk, we'll justify. It's like I told you about the tape that Dr. Sapphire recorded. Here I am looking at my watch, and a day or two I have to catch a plane, have to catch a boat to sail to Israel, have a million things to do. And Dr. Grinstein says, Arnold, you must listen and give me your comment. And I told you, it said not to be listened for 50 years. I'm sure the tape doesn't, it had no value, but he was justifying. The commentator, the students were angry at him. Fine, we're human beings. Archives are much more truthful, because in two modern times, with what goes on with email and the FBI and the Shin Bet and the Mossad, and anything you do today is recorded. But when you write a letter, you don't expect anyone to read it. Basically speaking, you tell the truth. And I showed you from the archives, and you can read my research, my postdoctoral research in Rakafet Aron, they were willing to sacrifice Kaplan. And they could have gotten away with that in the 20s, not in the 30s. They were willing to make the seminary a more yeshivish program. Balabatim viewed it instead of spending millions on two institutions, we'll spend hundreds of thousands and have one major good dynamic institution. And you have to understand, from a Balabhadrasya point of view, this makes sense. Now, what's very fascinating is that the conservative movement by the 1930s, they start to develop. They're on their own. There are no brakes on them. They're not held back. No one is telling them, compromise, be more conservative with a small c. Now there's a yeshiva and a yeshiva college. It's demarked. The demarcation is clear. We're the seminary. And here I'll show you an amazing source. And I have to tell you, the source that I quote, you can quote 1,000 times over. Because what was happening by the 1930s? Feminism is an issue that has haunted us since Virginia Slims smoked in public. Since Susan Anthony said, trust in God and she will save us. And feminists, it's a very, you have to understand, this is a legitimate issue. A woman is saying, I can leave the house, I can smoke, I can wear pants, I can hold down a job, I can fight in the army. Well, why do I have to sit behind the barrier? A distant relative we visited in Los Angeles, but they're Jewish, they're still Jewish. I mean, we who are in America, my wife's family's in America, 150 years, so either the family's living in Israel and kimat kulam shomrei Torah v'mitzvot 100%, or they're living in America and they're totally assimilated, intermarried, not married, homos, who knows what, when, where. So we visit these people, distant relatives, and they're Jews, they're married, they have children, they go to a conservative temple, and they open up a mouth against the shul where the women sit behind the wall. I expected this lady to tell me, Malka's married to Malka's cousin, that when you walk into an Orthodox shul, they take the women into a separate room and they whip them 39 lashes, the way she was describing, sitting behind the wall with horror. No? So the women say, why can't we put on talit? Why can't we put on tefillin? You understand? Why are we any different? Rabbi Riskin tells the story, and feminism, you got to remember, right there in Lincoln Square Synagogue was a hotbed, the late 60s, early 70s. And Rabbi Riskin tells the story, a girl who has studied with me in Michlala goes over to him and says, why can't I put on tefillin? I'm graduating Barnard. Every toilet-trained male, I'm quoting her, can put on tefillin. I can't put on tefillin? And you know, then they call them gufnaki. These are delicate issues. Okay, now, we have to appreciate that we have answers, and that we have guidance, that we have Torah, that we have one basic word, surrender. This is what the Rav taught me. First, this is the whole concept of machlekes korech vadato, common sense, talit shekulot chaylet, bayit malei svarim. Gentlemen, you know what I'm talking about. And this is a word that the modern mind refuses to accept. Surrender. Then we can start to try to understand the Torah system. But first we have to surrender. This problem is with us and has been with us. The conservatives took advantage of it. And by the 1930s, they didn't muffle themselves. And here I give you a classic example of what we're talking about. One second, just let me get the exact page. Page 111. I'm quoting to you from Bernard Revel, Builder of American Orthodox Judaism. And on Bernard Revel, I quote a graduate of the seminary, Louis J. Sheffel, gives a sermon in the late 1920s. And this is Kol Nidre night in this shul. And they want an English-speaking rabbi for Kol Nidre night. And he says to the audience, I do believe the men and women should be sitting together. I do believe in the children sitting with the parents. the service as it is at present constituted holds nothing. There is no future for an Orthodox synagogue unless we institute progressive reforms. On this, the holiest day of the year, I tell you that we can have no future unless we are willing to sacrifice something for our youth. Now, this sermon, this type of thinking, you can multiply 100 times over, 1,000 times over. By the 1930s, this was an epidemic all over the United States. They're now two separate institutions. Orthodoxy, old-fashioned, European, Yiddish-speaking, Rabbanim, whose native language was yet Yiddish. Conservative Judaism, we meet the needs. We understand Virginia Slims. Rebel against your elders. Mechitza, take it down. Integrate. Women are equal to men. And this was where the conservative movement found a very fruitful audience, because the grandparents were Yudapayasha. Even if they weren't totally Shomer Shabbos in America, even if they had to work for a living, even if they compromised on parts of Torah, but the shul remained the shul. The Rav had to be a Rav. Their children had feeling, had respect. But some of the children, and certainly the grandchildren, when a conservative rabbi spoke like this, tradition and change, as Meir Waxman, a famous conservative rabbi, put it, it was like rain falling on parched soil. And by the 1930s, they no longer had to censor themselves. Mordechai Kaplan is king. Conservative Judaism is powerful. No one will dream of a merger. They are now two separate bodies moving further and further apart. What's very fascinating, and this comes back to haunt us time and again, we'll talk about it in great detail when we deal with the history of Rabbinical Council of America, many of the seminary students were Yeshiva College graduates. Percentage-wise, I'm willing to bet it is on to 50%, the 30s, the 40s, into the 50s. And why? Why? You just heard it in Sheffield's sermon. They really believed the future was with the conservative movement. They really believed we had to compromise. Oskar Janowski, I was walking along Rehov King George the other day. And you know, their bookstore selling books, they buy up libraries, 5 shekel. I haven't placed to put the books, I don't buy them. But Oskar Janowski was professor at City College of New York. He was a sociologist. Early 40s. I quote him in Revlike, probably quote him in Silver, quote him elsewhere. He comes out with a book, Compositive Portrait of American Judaism. It's a collection of articles. One of the articles is by one of the most prominent Orthodox New York rabbis, Rabbi David de Sola Poole, Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. And he writes that in America, Orthodoxy will have to make endless adjustments. And he predicts there will not be any synagogue with a mechitza except for the Sephardic synagogues, because there, the mechitza, the balcony, is part of the Sephardic traditions. But the Ashkenazim, there won't be a mechitza. And this is David de Sola Poole, who was Orthodox, married to Tamar, in his article in Composite Portrait, Janowski.
When did he write the article?
42. It appeared in 42. And this is the way they thought. And I can give you live examples one after another. Some of you, they're very strict now with anyone walking into this building. They have to know who you are because of the robbery that took place. All right, it's a sad story what happened here. And they got rid of Marco, who I was very close to. He worked here 8 years. And you know, he helped liberate Jerusalem. He was a paratrooper. My grandson would talk with him and learning. They were both in the same unit, many decades apart, both paratroopers.
Why did they get rid of him, you know?
Because this guy, well, it's a whole story, because he didn't check the person who walked in, and he went up to the second floor and he robbed the computer. So, one second, Marco, where was I? Oh, so yesterday, a Talmud had to see me. The consultant we made the appointment to see me at 8:30, all right? Comes into, he hasn't been here since he studied here 20 years ago. So he comes into the building, they search him, they check him, he has to show identity, what goes on, he couldn't believe it. Okay, this Talmud, did you see Rabbi Goldschneider? His father, Zichrono Livracha, was 1 year behind me in Yeshiva College. His father graduates Yeshiva College and along with many others goes on to the seminary, becomes a very prominent conservative rabbi in Long Island where he remained till the day he died. I taught all four of his children. I taught Aaron and his sister Ilana and his two other brothers. The brothers I taught in BMT. Ilana I taught in Machon Gold. Aaron I taught in BMT and taught him again in the Kollel. Now why this father? Why? You could, his father, very same answer. The future was there. You got to make some compromise. You're not going to hold on to them. And this is where Tova Lichtenstein, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein, says time and again in her interviews and what she writes about her father, and in the last 2 years she really has come out in public about the Rav. Until then it was like the children couldn't talk about him. But now, kol hakavod. And she makes the point, if not for her father, there would not be the Torah we know of in America. There would be Haredim, and there would be a left-wing conservative slash right-wing, left-wing orthodoxy slash right-wing conservative Judaism. And the Rav stood firm. And we owe the Mechitza. And Rakefet says, and everyone laughs at him, but don't laugh. When you think about it, he's right. Today we have different problems. Shira Hadasha, egalitarian minyanim, women shlichat zibur, and in all these shuls, they have a mechitza. It's mind-boggling. No one will dare take the mechitza down today. So on one hand, we've come a long way, but the problem haunts us on a different level. But had the seminary and yeshiva merged, would have been a different ballpark altogether. But if is the biggest word in the dictionary. Let me go further. There's another tremendous development, in my humble opinion, that comes about in the greater Yeshiva University repertoire, or call it under the aegis of the Yeshiva. And I think that this is a direct result of the success of the seminary on one level, and the personalities of Rabbis Revel and Belkin on another level. And it's fascinating because this development continues until today. All the critics of Yeshiva criticize it on many levels, but what I'm about to talk about is more low-keyed, so the criticism is more low-keyed. And my dear students, this takes us back to lectures I gave many years ago. When we left the ghetto, we discovered a world of Haskalah. And in the world of Haskalah, it's not necessarily anti-Torah, but it's a different approach, more scientific, more broad. When we study Gemara in a yeshiva, we open up the Gemara and ask, what are we interested in? This sugya. We're going to learn a sugya of Kedushin. Kesef, shtar, bia, shevik kesef, kekesef. You're not going to do an analytical study What was marriage like in the nations, the countries surrounding Israel? How did other people get married? When you study Masechet Shabbat and you want to learn how to prepare a platah l'Shabbat, how do you prepare the food for Shabbat? What do you put on the blech, the tin? How do you put it on? How do you heat it? But you don't go into a study, what did Jews eat at the time of the Talmud? Clothes, what did they wear? How did they dress? How did they write? What type of ink did they use? You understand? These are all fabulous questions, but they don't bother the yeshiva boy or the halachist. Call it what you wish. In yeshiva service, called Chanan, and in Ne Yisrael, and let's mention Ne Yisrael because everyone, we spoke about it yesterday, Ne Yisrael and the Rosh Yeshiva and Dov Lipman and Rakepit's message to Dov Lipman, that was only yesterday's Shia. But it doesn't trouble them. Scientifically, when you go with Haskalah, when you go with Wissenschaft des Judentum, these are interesting topics. All right, which is more important? Obviously, anyone who studied in the yeshiva, anyone who cares about Torah, the most important thing is to study Torah, to be Baki and Shasim Paiskim. If someone wants to go into Chachmat Yisrael afterwards, Bavakasha, there can be nothing wrong with it. And we benefit greatly. I don't have to tell you, I just walked through the Beis Medrash this morning, and I take a look, there's a Shita Mekubetzet. I say, gee, this Shita Mekubetzet looks a little different than the red one I grew up with, the five-volume red one. I open it up, an edited edition under the aegis of Mossad Rav Kook. Wow, I was born before my times. What a piece of work. You guys don't have to sweat. You open up a Ramban, you open up a Rashba, you open up the Talmudical Encyclopedia. It's all not just Talmud Torah. It's Talmud Torah enhanced by Chachmat Yisrael. And you can have Haskalah, Wissenschaft des Judentum. We learned it from the Gentiles. Since I don't want to go into detail now, since it was the first one. But we benefit. We take the positive out of it. Now, in Europe, rabbinical seminaries developed. Rabbinical seminaries developed because when you come out of the ghetto, you become very utilitarian, very pragmatic. Some of you have that problem. Imagine you want to go to Lakewood. So you say to your parents say to you, how long are you going to learn in Lakewood? When are you going to go to college? You tell your parents, well, I'll learn until I feel I have to go further. What's the difference? 5, 6, 10 years. That answer doesn't hold water in a utilitarian, pragmatic world. You got to get a degree. You have to get a job. It has to be delineated. So rabbinic seminaries developed in Europe, and you have the prototype of the rabbinic seminary that we're totally from was the Berlin Rabbinic Seminary for Orthodox Judaism, popularly called Hildesheimers, like they used to call JTS Schechters after their founders, Solomon Schechter and Israel Hildesheimers. So it's popularly called Hildesheimers. Hildesheimers was not a yeshiva anymore. Hildesheimers, you had a course of study. You had to pass exams. You had to take various courses. The method taught was scientific. Everything was scholarly. Professor Hildesheimer himself did his doctorate, edited. He was the first one to edit the Halachot Gedolot, the Bahag. Today there's an edited edition by his great-grandson, I believe. That's the one we use today. But he was the first one to edit it. And you have to get a doctorate at a university. It's a different world. JTS, and giving it the credit that it was Orthodox. Again, I've given many lectures on this. I don't want to go into nuances now. But giving it the credit that it was Orthodox, JTS was modeled as a seminary, not as a yeshiva. Now, what's interesting about Rabbis Revel and Belkin, they were both Litvishika Onim. They were Eluim. Rabbi Rebel, who I didn't know, but I heard Eidot. Danny, listen to me carefully. I had Eidot Nemana from people who were very critical. Kelja, who wound up in YU as Rashi Yeshiva, who would have been great people in Europe and in America, they were nothing because they were greenhorns. They told me, Eidot Nemana, Rablazer Volk told me that Rabbi Rebel knew every Tosfos and Shas by heart. Rabbi Belkin, I can tell you, Eidot Nemana. When I got my doctorate, and some Jew, Rogozin, did wonderful things to the Sheffel Kalkali, the depression of 69 when he lost a fortune of money. So he decided rabbis have to stress ethics. Balavatam always accused rabbis, you follow me, Shmuel? They're not ethical enough. They don't realize the pressures a rabbi is under. So he gave Yeshiva a fortune of money to establish an institute of ethics. Rabbi Dr. Isidor Twesky, the Rav's son-in-law, headed the institute, and the Rav and Rabbi Belkin were the co-directors. 10 students were chosen to do scholarly work in the institute. One of those chosen was a young man named Donald Rothkopf, who did work on Dinner de Malchut of Dinner. Josh Berman Rothkopf speeded it up, was the first one to complete his research because he was going in Aliyah. Okay? Rothkopf hands it in. I'm an eyewitness to all this. Rothkopf hands it in, and I'm sitting there with the Rav, and I don't know where I got the guts. I was still a kid, but all right, I was a rabbi doctor. I thought I knew something. But I knew nothing. I apologize to my students of the 60s for how little I knew. But what can I do? Yiftach bedoro kashmul bedoro. Ellie, while we're talking, and I knew all the Rishonim, the Achronim, I gave a whole year in the Kollel on Dinner the Malchut. I've published, looking to Rakafar Aaron, that article, Rakafar Aaron appeared, it's been republished many times in various places, okay? With permission or without permission. Ellie, I mentioned something to Dr. Belkin. This is 68, 69. Within a minute, out of his head flows the Kesef Mishnah, the Mishnah Lemelech, the whole sugya, the application, the Rishonim, the Maram Rottenberg. They were tremendous lamdanim. You have no idea what they knew. These were Iluyim. Rabbi Belkin got smicha, what, at the age of 17? Okay. But what's fascinating, both of them were exposed to Chachmat Yisrael. Whether it was planned or whether it was accidental, both of them caught up with Chachmat Yisrael. Rabbi Revel comes to America, running away from Europe. We spoke about it. Imprisoned by the Tsar, 1905, 1906, arrives in America. Has no address to go to. Goes to Yeshiva Sri B'Shol Chan, and everyone knew that's where Greenhorn goes, who knows how to learn. Rabbi Leventhal comes in. What, are you wasting your time here? You know Shas by heart. Come to Philadelphia, be my assistant rabbi. Get a college education. It's a master's. And then he goes to Dropsy. Dropsy had just been organized. Dropsy was the American version of an institute devoted to scientific Jewish scholarship, although it didn't give ordination, but it gave secular degrees. Rabbi Revel goes, and he is the first PhD from Dropsy. Graduates 1912, 1913. You can look and Revel get the exact details. What does he do his doctorate on? A very fascinating topic. When you learn Mishnah Brura, you would never think of this. When he learned Shulchan Aruch, he had to think, what did the Tztukim do? What did the Sadducees do? What did the Karaites do? What did the followers of Philo do? And his doctorate is on a comparison of halacha and what they call other traditions. Now, you know what's amazing? Rabbi Belkin comes to America, couldn't speak English. It's 1929. Couldn't speak English. Comes to Yeshiva Reb Chochanan. It's now uptown. Rabbi Revel is overwhelmed. He sees this young kid. He sees himself. Tries to reach, I have the correspondence, tries to reach relatives of Rabbi Belkin. They should give him $15 a month. He should have a little support. I mean, it's mind-boggling. This kid is penniless. So he lives b'chavruta with a kid from Canada, Nussen Wachtvogel. And they make a deal. I heard this directly from Reb Nussen. I'm not quoting Rabbi Belkin now. Who did Reb Nussen Wachtvogel become? No, help me out. Who are we talking about? Mashgiach of Lakewood, Reb Aaron Cutler's right hand, the Alta Mashgiach, Reb Nussen. Well, Reb Nussen told me Rabbi Belkin taught him Gemara. He taught Rabbi Belkin English. Okay. Rabbi Belkin's there, needs Parnassa, becomes a Rosh Yeshiva in New Haven. But Rabbi Belkin had a tremendous drive. He's going to conquer America. You see, listen carefully, Yeli. This goes back to what we spoke about after Shir last week. Tremendous drive. He's going to conquer America. All right, to conquer America, you need a college education. All right. Winds up at Harvard, Brown University. Does a doctorate at Brown. Can anyone tell me what Rabbi Belkin's doctorate is on? No? Yitzchak. He's awake? Well, what happened there? Dr. Belkin's doctorate, do you know what it's on? Tell the class. It's a continuation of Rabbi Revel's work. You understand what I'm saying? Rabbi Revel centered on Sadducean and Karayim. Dr. Belkin took the Philonian aspect and developed it 100 times further. So you see, both of them had a feeling, a respect for Chochmat Yisrael. Okay? Now there's another fact. I'm going to elaborate, but I just want to give you a feeling of the background. This is the 1930s. What makes a yeshiva yeshiva? What makes a school a school? In our world, what counts? Faculty. This is not a degree. This is not a bachelor's or master's. When you seek out a yeshiva, you want a rebbe. You want a dominant personality. I got up in front of, where did I say this? This is in Israel recently. I got up in front of an Israeli crowd and I said, I am only standing here today because Israelis are idiots. The crowd looked at me. And I said, had you elected the Rav, Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935, where would I be today? I'd be a medical doctor. I hope I'd be from, who knows where I'd be living, Teaneck, Lawrence. Who knows? But we had a miracle. The Israelis were stupid, rejected the Rav. He went back to America, and a little kid from the Bronx paid 5 cents to get on a bus. 20 minutes later, I got off the bus. I walked a few blocks on Amsterdam Avenue, opened up room 102, and I sat down next to the Brisker Rav's grandson. That's what life is all about. Tells. Why did Tells in Cleveland fall apart? Because it's a Litvish yeshiva, you have to be part of the family. They couldn't produce good Rashi yeshiva. They're in competition with Lakewood, with Mir in New York. We're Israel. Israel is the biggest competitor. Mir, Bris, Israel, Panovich, Chevron, you got to produce. Rebbeim, the Gush, Rav Amital, Rav Lichtenstein, giants. The seminary had one tremendous individual who was a calling card, a lightning rod. Professor Levi Ginsberg. And we're now talking the 1930s. He's in his prime. So I think this lack of a merger, had there been a merger, I think I can diagram, and from the correspondence I saw, I'm willing to bet I'm 90% right. The yeshiva and seminary would have merged. The yeshiva would have continued in a traditional yeshivish fashion, or what Rakefet calls Talmud Torah, vis-a-vis Chochmat Yisrael. And on a graduate level, you would have had supplementary seminary-like courses on a high level of Chochmat Yisrael, and a graduate of the merged yeshiva seminary would have been a mismach and a Talmud Chacham, and he would have had the additional chance to enhance his knowledge and ability with Chochmat Yisrael, with the masters, with the doctorate, etc. But the merger didn't work out. And I think I'm 90% right. Maybe I'm entirely right, but when you're trying to reconstruct history, don't overstate your case. Rabbis Revel and Belkin had a natural inclination to Chochmat Yisrael because both of them had doctorates and they knew what it was about. And many of the students felt that pull. There's Levi Ginsberg, Louis Ginsberg. We're going to talk about him in detail because most in yeshivas, they pass over him today. You have to understand who he was to understand the pull that existed. This was not Mordechai Kaplan. This was not an Amoritz. This was not a product of America. This was the Vilna Gaon's great nephew who was a Gaon Adir. I'll show you documents. I'll show you the respect in which he was held. Students wanted Chochmat America. These are bright kids. These are kids who want to conquer the world. And remember, when you're an American, and it's justifiably so, you don't want to have exactly what Europe had. European Torah, we can't transplant Mir into Brooklyn today. It's a different Mir in Brooklyn. It's a different Lakewood today. I don't know if Baron Cutler would be satisfied with what developed in Lakewood. The Lakewood of today is not Kletz. This is not Lithuania. Open up, I told you, when we spoke about Rabbi Warren Goldstein's book. You read that book carefully. Read the footnotes. Read the thrust. There is a real critique in there of what has happened to the Lithuanian world. Now you can understand Rakefet when he cries and says, the Hasidim have conquered all. Not that I'm opposed to Hasidim. I love Hasidim. I'm happy to see they conquered all. As a Lithuanian, oh boy, did we lose the battle. All right, I can give many lectures why we lost. But we lost. Read Warren Goldstein. Wow, I love that book. Kol HaKavod, and that he should write it and publish it. Baruch Hashem. Kol HaKavod. But the world changes. We're bright people. There's the constant, ongoing Hegelian dialectics. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And this resulted in YU, or Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, gradually, surely, but slowly and certainly, organizing its first graduate school in the mid-30s, a graduate school of Jewish studies, Chochmat Yisrael, scientific Jewish scholarship, Mada HaYahadut, call it with whatever title you want to call it. It developed a school that today is known as the Bernard Revel Graduate School. And Rakefet claims it owes its inception, and I'm unanimous in this, if I may quote, are you being served, if you know what I'm talking about. I'm unanimous in this, that it's a direct result of the lack of the merger. Had there been a merger, automatically you would have been involved with some Chochmat Yisrael. But there wasn't a merger, and there was Rabbi Revel, and there was Rabbi Belkin, and there was Louis Ginsberg, Professor Ginsberg, Harav Hagon, Reb Levi Ginsberg, and YU, you had to do something. Okay. Now I'll fill in the details. Yes, Yitzchak.
I wonder if anybody did a study of how many yeshiva college students and Weitzman went to the dropsy for their doctorates. Because if you notice, Agus and
Honig.
Honig. They all studied in dropsy.
That's correct.
So it could be because dropsy did not threaten the way seminary did.
Yeah.
Seminary.
Right. You had to be conservative, and dropsy was parav.
Neutral.
Parav.
The study there with Jacob Agus,
right,
who was a Reconstruction.
Right.
The study with Israel Efres, with Seifel, and with the apicorus of the generation, Theodore Gassner.
Right. And Gassner came from Firm Stock. He was a chacham, etc. Interesting point. You're probably right that the dropsy was parav, but you see, what's amazing is, had there been a merger, Bernard Rebbe would not exist today. And I view this, and I'll tell you, okay, now, you'll see. I now want to reveal something and record it for posterity, because at my age, I want to get it out of me. It's a very fascinating point I'm about to make. I have no right to talk about this in public, but 50, 60 years later, I take the liberty, and it's fascinating. When I finished my doctorate, and it turned out to be a very important moment in my life, at the time you're young and you don't realize what the implications are, JPS accepted the book as a possible publication. Now, when I say that today, you don't even know what I'm talking about. JPS then was the most prestigious publisher of Jewish books in the world. JPS was a public trust. It's not like today that all the book publishers are interested is in making money. And any Tom, Dick, and Harry comes up with half a decent book and can raise $20,000, your book will be published. JPS selected 10 books a year. Do you remember this? 10 books a year. And they paid total publication. The author had to do nothing as far as money. And my doctor was accepted, and it had to be reworked on a more popular level, which took a few years. But it was a very big achievement. My book was the first so-called Orthodox book ever to be published by JPS, because it was controlled by some of the very names that Yitzchak mentioned. It was in the hands of Grazel and others, a conservative outlook, to say the least.
It was an open man.
They were open. He dealt with my book. It shows he was open. Now, I'm going in Aliyah. In those years, when you went in Aliyah, you went in Aliyah by boat, and I was a young kid. I had no means, no money. And we were leaving America. Our feeling was we would never see America again. All right. So I had a real problem. I'm going to publish a book where I'm going to write about Rabbi Revel, who is no longer alive, but I'm going to write about Rabbi Belkin. I'm going to write about Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and let me come back to Rabbi Belkin. I'm going to write about Rabbi Belkin, who appointed me a Rosh Yeshiva in 1962, and I'm very in debt to him, and I don't have to tell you Rav Soloveitchik. So I felt certain documents, I need their permission to publish. So I go to the Rav. I found in the suitcases that Mrs. Rebel was ready to throw out, I found a 4-page letter the Rav wrote to Rabbi Revel from Berlin. Now, it was an obsequious letter, because the Rav is in Berlin, a young kid. He may very well have to come to the United States. At that point already, he knew he had to come to the United States. His dream of the Vilna Rabbinate has ended. And he's going to need Rabbi Revel's help. And he writes to Rabbi Revel with all that he's done for Reb Meisher, and hopes to meet him, etc., and praises Rabbi Revel. So, Josh, I go to the Rav, I show him the letter. I say, Rebbe, you know, my book has been accepted, JPS, and we're going to publish. I translated part of the letter. Do I have your permission? And the Rav looks at the letter. And he says, oy, he says, I would never write a letter like this today, but what can I tell you? Chasimas yodai me'id alai kishnei edim. It's my letter. Do whatever you wish with it. I wrote it. That was the Rav. I go to Rabbi Belkin. I show him a letter that I'm going to quote from. I hold it to be one of the most important contributions I've made in Washington. Show him a letter he wrote to Rabbi Belkin, to Rabbi Revel. When Revel starts dreaming about opening this graduate school, and he's going to appoint Rabbi Dr. Shmuel Belkin to head the graduate school, teach in the graduate school. You know, it begins small. And Rabbi Belkin writes to Rabbi Revel his concept of a graduate school under the auspices of yeshiva. It's a fabulous letter. I don't believe anyone has ever equaled it. One paragraph, fabulous. So I show it to Rabbi Belkin. And Rabbi Belkin looks at it, looks and says, oh, he says, do me a favor. Don't quote me. Lose it in the paragraph. Those were Rabbi Belkin's words to me. In Belkin, in Revel, I did it. I lost it. In Washington, in Toto, it's there. Ellie Wagner is sitting there, his hat. There's a picture in the office where he robbed the hat I wear during the winter. And it just blew off his head. Because Ellie Wagner is asking the same question you're asking. Why did Rabbi Belkin say to me, lose it in the paragraph, Memanavshach? You wrote the letter. Publish it. What are you double talking for? Good question, Ellie. Here's where you have to know Dr. Belkin. And this is sad that no one has done a definitive study while people are still alive who understood Rabbi Belkin. Rabbi Belkin lived in two worlds. He was not the Rav. The Rav worked out a beautiful life of what Rakefet calls harmonious coexistence between Reb Chaim Litvish and New England. Being a Brahmin, New England is the greatest place in the world. Scholarship, science. Wow. To Gevatosha Menachi Machem. You never felt a moment of tension. This is why the yeshiva world could never handle the Rav, because they couldn't comprehend how he could move so easily Boston to New York with all that that implies. But that was the Rav. That was his achievement. Do we have it today? Can we do it today? Do the YRS yeshiva have it today? Good, you discuss it. It's an interesting question. But that was the Rav. Rabbi Belkin lived in two worlds. Here, this little kid who came to America, who couldn't speak English, conquers America, builds Yeshiva University. You have no idea what this man accomplished. Opened Stern College. Just think for 1 minute. It was epic making. Education for women at the highest level. Torah education. Albert Einstein Medical School changes the whole status of Jews and medicine and quotas in the entire world, basically. Today, every hospital you go into in the United States of America, you find kippot all over the place. It's unbelievable. I've been in hospitals, you might think that they're an extension of a shtibble. Denver, Los Angeles, New York, wherever you go. How many minyanim for mincha in Columbia Presbyterian? I mean, what this man accomplished. And who did he have to speak? Albert Einstein. Bosom buddies. And Rabbi Revel could barely speak. Did you ever hear him? Not just in English. In English, in Yiddish, he followed his voice. You could probably understand him. It was, oh, it's unbelievable. It was unbelievable what this man accomplished. So he, on one hand, he was a universal man and part of the big world. President of the university. Dealing with every... Cardinal Spellman. You know the story with Cardinal. It's classic. The New York Times wrote it up. They honor Cardinal Spellman. And Cardinal Spellman owned New York. And he was a good friend of the Jews. Francis Cardinal Spellman. So Rabbi Belkin is one of the speakers. And Rabbi Belkin gets up and in his English, which he says, Rabbi, the Cardinal and I share one thing in common. We both are wearing skull caps. But your skull cap is red and your institutions are in the black. My skull cap is black, but my institutions are in the red. This is Shmuel Belkin. That same Dr. Belkin, a moment later, Rothkopf pinched him with dinner, the Malchut dinner. All of Litvish, the kid who learned by the Chafetz Chaim that learned by Reb Shimon Shkop was with Reb Shimon Ram. It all came, he's back again, he's a kid, he's in a different world. What Rabbi Belkin was saying to me was, I don't want the world to know, the world of the yeshiva, the world which I grew up in, the world which is my basic roots. I don't want them to know, I know so much Chachmat Yisrael, keep it a secret. Let the letter get lost in the paragraph. That was Rabbi Belkin. You got me, Eli? Contradistinction to the Rav. Am I right, Yitzchak, or not? The Rav, you never felt that tension. It was harmonious coexistence. I don't want to use the word synthesis, because I don't think it was a synthesis. I think it was harmonious coexistence. Now, let me quote the letter. What letter am I talking about? It's a powerful letter. When was the Rambam born? I'm quoting from Revel now, beginning on page 199. Rambam was born in 1135. 1935 was the octocentennial of his birth. What Rabbi Revel did at the yeshiva was like Rabbi Revel had achieved his dream. An absolute synthesis between the Rambam as the Mishneh Torah, the greatest Torah personality to live since Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, and the Rambam as the great physician, the great philosopher, the great scientific scholar. So he organized the lecture series at the yeshiva. This was Rabbi Revel. You have to give him all the credit in the world. This is right after the Depression. The light is starting to shine again. There's slight money in the yeshiva. So Rabbi Revel gives his shiur on the Mishneh Torah. But he also has Dr. Solomon Zeitlin giving a lecture. The life and work of Maimonides, from a new angle. He also brings Dr. Harry Wilson of Harvard to give a lecture on the Guide to the Perplexed. He brings Dr. David Mach, do you recognize the name, from Baltimore, of Johns Hopkins University, who is a world famous physician. And he gives a lecture. Maimonides, as a physician, as a scientist. He brings a young man from Boston, Rabbi Dr. Joseph Soloveitchik. One shiur he gives is purely halacha. And the second shiur he gives a week later, Maimonides and Kant on the conception of freedom of the will and the problem of physical causality in the modern theory of knowledge. No, do you understand what the Rebbe is talking about? I don't. Yitzchak, fine.
Is this lecture available anywhere?
And not as far as I know. It was never published, but I don't know. I don't know. No. The archives, I know what the archives were, yeshiva in the 30s. I wouldn't overstate the case.
You know, they got excited by the title. But the Rav spoke about many times, the idea of the Shulchan
Aruch. Okay. But what am I trying to show here is that you see Revel already as early as 35 had this vision. Talmud Torah, classic, traditional, a graduate school, scientific. Well, in 1935, Rabbi Belkin got his PhD. He now needed Panasa. He was appointed, beginning with 36. You can check all the dates in the book I arranged to publish, of Vic Geller, Orthodoxy Reawakens. It's essentially about Rabbi Belkin. It's a memoir. I'll give you exact information when I deal with Dr. Belkin in depth. But 36, he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva Sfas Chochan. You should know that Rabbi Belkin was the most beloved Rosh Yeshiva in the history of the yeshiva, basically. The students, I knew his students, they loved him. And he loved his students. It's perhaps a tragedy of his life. And young men, listen, Daniel, listen to me carefully, because in life you're going to have to make a lot of decisions. I thank God I never left the classroom. I don't have to elaborate. The Rav's greatest dream was to become president of YU, Rakefet says, in the year 2014. Thank God my Rebbe did not achieve his dream. Morty, do you understand me or not? What life is about. Read Shulamit Meiselman's memoir. She attributes her father's death to the opposition of making Rav the president. Tova Tova is my father. The greatest dream. Dr. Belkin achieved the dream. No, Ellie, you understand what we spoke about? What a price he paid for achieving that dream. And you should know, he tried to hold on for 1 year, 44, 45, he said a shiur yet. Try to hold on desperately to be a Rebbe. 45, it's all over. He's president, Yeshiva University, Albert Einstein, New York State Regents, accreditation, everything that goes with it. Now, on page 200, third paragraph, I summarize Rabbi Belkin's letter. Of course, Rabbi Belkin now, 36, becomes a Rosh Yeshiva. 37, he starts teaching Greek and Latin in the college. In 37, they start a graduate program. One or two courses Rabbi Belkin is teaching in the graduate program. Yes, Daniel.
The story in Washington, either Dr. Rev or Dr. Belkin, that they were in a classroom and they forgot the line of the Tosfos, right? And then they started crying that they...
I told you that. I don't know if it's in Washington, but I told you that the story was with the Hitler period, so all the pressure on yeshiva was to save people. You have no idea what went on in the late 30s. God have mercy on us. And Rabbi Revel, they would issue, you had to get a non-quota immigrant visa. I explained it. And after 22, immigration to America was limited. It had a quota. The Eastern Europe quota was filled beyond capacity. So you had to get a visa. You had to go through hell. So Rabbi Revel invited two Tells graduates, and he had affinity, Rabbi Revel, to Tells, because that's the only yeshiva he ever spent time in. He was there half the year, okay? Because he was autodidactic. He studied with his father. He was a god at the age of 12 already. He knew, he had a photographic memory. So One of the Rosh Yeshiva he brought to America was Rav Shmuel Lezer Volkel, was one of the hotshots of Tells. He was Chavruta with Rav Chaim Rabinovich, with the Rosh Yeshiva's son, who they said was a gonadir, was killed by Hitler. And this was his Chavruta. So he came to America. There was no opening up at the yeshiva. He taught in Baltimore, I believe in Chafetz Chaim in Baltimore. When there was an opening at MTA to be a Rebbe in Reitz, they brought him to New York. So Rabbi Revel came in to Rabbi Shmuel Lezer Volkshir to see what type of lamdan, what type of shia. And Rabbi Shmuel Lezer got involved and quoted a Tosfot. And Rabbi Revel argued that he's not quoting the Tosfot correctly. So they brought in the other Gemara. They sent the kid to the library, bring this other Gemara. And in those days, it wasn't like today, you have a whole shas on a little table. A shas was gigantic. It wasn't until in the 50s, I remember the first time they published the small shas, and I remember Duvi Hartman going crazy. How do I remember Duvi Hartman going crazy? Because the people who published it went bankrupt, and they didn't deliver all the shasim that were ordered. And Duvi, I remember Duvi yelling and saying, I'm sure they eat not kosher, you know, this was what we call today Haredim. I'm sure that, but menschlichkeit, business ethics, I can remember Duvi word by word, in motion. So they bring in the big, excuse me? Not Beseda. He had a point, but Beseda. So they bring in the Gemara, and they look up the Tosfot, and Rabbi Volk is right. And Rabbi Revel starts to cry, Ich vergesse alles, was ich habe gekannt, alle, was designed, the president hat von mir weggenommen, the Zeit, the learning, the Mayach. And he started to cry. You follow me?
Do you think that they knew what they were getting into when all these rabbis accepted the presidency? And if it would have mattered?
Look, no one knows what they're getting into. But when you have a normal person, let me tell you a story with the rabbi. I'm telling all the stories I know that I can't tell in public, but I'm telling them anyway. Let me tell you a story with the rabbi. The rabbi came to an RCA convention. The court photographer, again, Rakefet named this person court photographer, it caught on, Rabbi Roy Albert, Irene Albert. Recognize the name? You have the rub or you don't have the rub? You know how to breathe there, you don't know how to breathe there. Where did Rakefet get all those pictures from? Rabbi Albert devoted 50 years to photographing the rub. That was his hobby. So Rabbi Albert asked the rub permission if he could make a display of his pictures that he took of the rub. He said, Rabbi, I want to put it up. People should see what I photographed. And the rub says, well, it doesn't look nice. I don't know, you know. Then the rub says, you know what? You know what? Yitzchak. His name is Yitzchak. Yitzchak, I'll tell you, a person has to have an ego. I have an ego too. Display the pictures. And the pictures were displayed. So I heard that story from Roy Albert. But you see, a person has an ego. So you want to achieve, it could be Rosh Yeshiva and president of Yeshiva. Is that chashuv or not chashuv? You tell me. Rabbi Riskin, 10 years ago, you know, when the elections were on, he wanted to become president. His wife ruined it for him. She refused to leave Israel. Vicky, kol hakavod. But the person has to have an ego. So you know what you're getting into? You can think you know. You don't really know. I can assure you, Richard Joel did not know what he was getting into. You understand? He was riding high. Suddenly, Fannie Mae, whatever they called it in America, the Sheffel Kalkali, what happened in America, the stock market, Madoff, Merkin, Madoff, in a million years. Did he ever dream about it? I asked Richard Joel, I said to him, you're an intelligent man. I know, I taught three of his children. I said, how could you lie? He says to me, Rabbi Rakefet, if you heard Madoff speak, you would think he's the most ethical man in the world. Period. Okay, so you ask me, you know what you're getting into? All right. But looking with hindsight, what can I tell you? Look what happened to Rabbi Belkin and look what happened to the Rav. Okay? Now, in this paragraph, page 200, I hide Rabbi Belkin's letter. The aim of the graduate school was to offer courses of study in the spirit of modern Jewish scholarship, while simultaneously remaining loyal to Orthodox Jewish tradition. A graduate school class in rabbinics did not attempt to cover the textual material of one Talmudic volume in the analytical fashion which characterized the yeshiva classes. Rather, it stressed a comprehensive approach to rabbinic jurisprudence. Various texts from different Talmudical tomes were analyzed for their inherent logical and ethical values. You see, that's a beautiful paragraph. And it hits the nail on the head, the difference between Talmud Torah and Chochmat Yisrael. But Rabbi Revel didn't want me to quote the letter. I lost it in the paragraph. I am writing about Rabbi Revel. I'm writing about Rabbi Belkin. And if I say Belkin, I'm always, you know, correct me. It's like Lulav and Etrog now, or Kiddush V'Havdalah. The Rebbe would be talking Kiddush V'Havdalah and saying Kiddush V'Havdalah, and 1,000 people will get out. Havdalah, Havdalah, Chvil Zenez is like Nochma. I want to see if you're still awake. That was the Rebbe's there. Okay? Now, in Washington, I have an entire chapter. And I have to tell you, what's disappointing about Washington, to Washington, Yeshiva University doesn't even know the book has been published. I think it's the finest book. I don't know of anyone else who's published a memoir, which is essentially about Yeshiva University and its influence on him. I don't know of anyone else who's published a memoir that's so positive about his experience at Yeshiva University. And I don't believe they even know this book was written. I live here. Here people know. There, no one gives a hoot. Israel, Kefet, Grus, doesn't exist outside of the 2 weeks that the big shots are here. I have an entire chapter on Bernard Revel Graduate School. And here, I reproduce the letter. Rabbi Belkin, I apologize, but I think so many years after your death, my reproducing the letter is a covered to your memory. If I made the wrong call, v'hu rachum yechapeh avon. If I made the right call, I am very gratified. Page 131. On February 18th, 1935, Dr. Belkin penned the following letter to Dr. Revel regarding the prospective program. Mind you, this is 1935. The graduate school does not really open until September 1937, but they were talking about it. I regret that we had no chance to talk over more carefully your suggestion that I should instruct the class in rabbinic literature as a postgraduate course of the Yeshiva College. I do not doubt that if you should succeed in establishing a graduate school, your achievement will be even greater than your noble work you have done till now. You may really add a new chapter in Jewish history, and I feel certain your dreams will come through, though you may have some hardships at the beginning. So you see, first of all, Rabbi Belkin appreciates what Rabbi Revel wants to do. And what he means by a new chapter, remember, we've always had yeshivat. We've always had graduate schools since the Enlightenment. But here is something unique. A graduate school appendix to a yeshiva. But now, how are you going to teach? Listen to what Rabbi Belkin says. There are, however, a few matters about my service which I want to emphasize. I do not have to tell you how much I am devoted to you and to the cause for which you have fought almost your whole life. You know better than I that if you want to establish a real graduate school, all courses given must be on a scientific basis. If my work on rabbinic literature should be merely covering of material or saying a shiur like a teacher in the yeshiva, it will never be a success, nor will it attract the attention of the students? Okay, this is a given. Another shiur? What do you need another shiur? You have the yeshiva. Ah, Danny Schulman is shaking. Josh Berman is shaking. So what does it mean? Scientific? What does this mean? Scientific basis. What about tradition? Will there be innovation? By scientific, I do not mean higher criticism of any kind, but a comprehensive approach to rabbinic jurisprudence and analysis of various sources, and also showing the logical and ethical value of rabbinic halacha. This is a course I am able to offer if I should spend enough time in preparation for it. We should start Makot in Seder Nezikin. My work would be one part in lecture form and another part a thorough discussion of the commentaries and texts such as Mishnah, Gemara, Tosfot, Rishonim. The class must be conducted in English and entirely independent of the yeshiva, and avoid unnecessary jealousies. Nu Yitzchak, do you see the insight of Rabbi Belkin here? How he hits the nail on the head. Eitz das Verzeihen in Yiddish. It's just another class emulating, aping the yeshiva program. Ma, what are they being machadish here? What is new? No, this has to be in English. It has to be jurisprudence. It has to be comparative. It has to be broad. It has to be much more embracive than a shiur in the yeshiva. The stress, the focus, how you approach it. It's not critical. It's not that you're going to come along and be critical and be negative. You may have to be involved in times as dealing with the proper text. But you see, I think what Rabbi Belkin is describing here is no different than Rabbi Soloveitchik's dream. Can anyone tell me what I'm referring to? After the Rav died, they found in his desk a manuscript he had written in the early 1940s. It was an introduction to what was going to be his magnum opus, creating an ethical, moral, philosophic Torah system based upon the halacha. New, remember, it was published by the Tweskies. What do they call it? The halachic mind, in contradistinction to the halachic man. It has been published, republished. You study that volume, and it's a small volume of 100-plus pages. You cry that the Rav had to get involved with life, get caught in the maelstrom, to commute, to teach, to prepare, and could never come back to that manuscript. Although Yitzchak will tell you that many times in his lectures, he did exactly what he promised. He took the halacha and created an ethical, moral, philosophic norm as a result of the halacha. But the all-perfect, beautiful work that he envisioned, unfortunately, life moves on, and we're only human beings. No, can anyone tell me who else was caught up in this and criticized? And people are so foolish. Ah, right in your ballpark. Washington Heights, Charlie. Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Cholev was an introduction to a major work he planned to write on Tayag Mitzvot. No, Professor Rosenblum, head of the department, Noah Rosenblum, at Stern College for Women, head of the Judaic Studies, Zichrono Livracha, very knowledgeable, wrote a volume on Rav Hirsch. The world looked forward to its coming out, published by JPS, if I'm not mistaken. Check me out. A non a non-Hersheyan, a non-Yeki, a Litvak, a YU product. Where was his PhD from? It probably was from Dropsy. I believe it was from Dropsy. Check it out. He's writing on Rav Hirsch, and he criticizes Rav Hirsch that he never brought to fruition the dream beyond the introduction. Gentlemen, and I want to ask you a question. Which is more important? What Rav Hirsch did in Germany, changing the world, bringing thousands, ultimately tens of thousands back to Torah, taking on the Reform movement, a man whose heritage lives on today? Or do we have to grieve for the books he should have written and could have written had he not been involved in all the maelstrom of life? Asiyat ha-chayim bi-evrit medubaret or evrit tiknit. Okay? Same thing with the Rav. And I want to tell you, this is a question that does not have resolution. You can always say, if we had the books, could influence so much more. If we had the Rav, Yitzchak cries, Saturday night in Boston, all those public she'urim, where are they? Why aren't they published? Why aren't they edited? The Rav didn't do it b'chayav. Liachamoto, it's not the same anymore. It's an ongoing question. On the other hand, look how many lives the Rav influenced. Look how many children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren there are today. Shomrei Torah mitzvot. Because someone heard the Rav give a shiur Saturday night in Boston in the 1960s. All right. It's an ongoing question.
So just since you mentioned my name, I'll just make one comment.
I'm going to end off.
There's enough money today in the Jewish Orthodox world for to take these 800 tapes, have someone transcribe them, have someone else go through, edit them, have a third person go through and find every source and list them, and then publish them.
Yitzchak, you're absolutely right, and I hope I'll just repeat it. If anyone's listening in Boston, we humble Jews sitting here in the heart of the world, the center of Jerusalem, B'tocheche Yerushalayim, we cry that we know these tapes are available, and we know that Abe Levovitz, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, promised the Rav he would not make them available. But I say to you, just as Rakefer has sinned and has published in toto Rabbi Belkin's letter to Rabbi Revel, and Rabbi and Aaron Rakefer is looking up to heaven at this moment, and he sees very positive signs that they're shining upon him for having published this letter. I think, and Rabbi Rubin has stated it, the money is available today. I even myself can tell you where to get the money. Put together top scholars, lock them in a room for 2 to 3 years, let them listen, write, edit, footnote the tapes. What a gift you will give humanity. Signed, your humble servants, Aaron Rakefet, Yitzchak Rubin, and many other wonderful students sitting in this room. But anyway, it's fascinating that same criticism that was Rosenblum against Hirsch, and was smart enough again. I was smart enough. In the 70s, I said, it's not right. People have dreams. When I left yeshiva, 61, kicked into the rabbin at the age of 23, I had a tremendous dream. Every Jew in America, I have to make Shomer Shabbos. Well, I'm ashamed to say, I not only didn't achieve the dream, but I pushed the dream aside. All right, did I do good with my life? Could I have done better? All right. These are open questions, but we're only human beings. But this, what Rabbi Revel hears from Dr. Belkin, it is fabulous. Now, let me just end off this letter, and let me end off the class. Rabbi Belkin adds on, who was another key figure on the yeshiva scene? Baruch atot melech olam she'akon yeh b'dvaro. Who was another key figure on the yeshiva scene at this time? You had Rabbi Revel. You had Rabbi Belkin. Dr. Pinchas Churgin. Okay, who was Dr. Churgin? The founder of Bar Ilan, first president. has children living in Israel, daughters. I hope they're still alive. One was a professor of music at Bar Ilan. Pinchas, a very famous name, a Velazhin, a Talmud who broadened and got a doctorate, a Chochmat Yisrael person. So Rabbi Belkin writes, we might later add, however, more causes, though it is premature to speak about it now. I also talked this matter over with Dr. Pinchas Corgan, and we were equally of the opinion that you will cherish such a course, which by no means will be contrary to our sacred traditions, and will still be in a scientific and modern approach. And I have to say, on this level, the Bernard Graduate School is a great achievement. It never really became an overpowering graduate school, and there are reasons why. I believe that at this moment in time, the majority of students at Bernard Revel are women. That's what I'm told. It has a very high percentage of women because it's provided an outlet for women to study on a higher level beyond the bachelor's. On the other hand, over the decades, the Bernard Revel Grad School has had some fantastic professors, world-famous people who ran away from Hitler. Professor Avraham Weiss is a classic example. Rav Shmuel Kalman Mirsky, Professor Agus, Professor Honig, Professor Roth, Professor Stitzkin. These are all people in my time who have published, who have achieved. Today you have some of the world's most famous people. It's beyond words whom they have attracted, people in every field of scholarship and achievement. And it all goes back to a small beginning with Rabbi Belkin and Rabbi Revel and this initial course and Rabbi Belkin's description, and a great deal has subsequently developed. Professor Richard Steiner, as you know, who's a genius of geniuses. I know him from before he was born, when he was a gleam in his mother's eyes. And he deciphered the papyri manuscripts from Egypt that no one could understand. Time magazine wrote him up. Newsweek wrote him up. Here's a professor at Bernard Revel Graduate School, brought in millions upon millions of dollars of publicity for Yeshiva University with his brilliance and knowledge of Semitic and ancient languages, etc., etc. In my own life, I don't have to tell you, I'm a product of having studied responsa literature at Bernard Revel, having studied Jewish history at Bernard Revel, and everything I do in life not only reflects Yeshiva service Kohanim, but it reflects the icing on the cake, I would call it, the fluff, the whipped cream, that the cherries, that the golden nuggets of delicious chocolate that I got at Bernard Revel. So I am Makir Taifa. But I've set the stage where we're not yet free, because I want to buttress my theory. Louis Ginsberg, the seminary, had a tremendous attraction. And I want to dedicate the next year, who was Louis Ginsberg? And you'll see, there will not be a boring moment next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. So to reiterate,
why couldn't they bring him to the...
First of all, who had the money of the seminary, the mid-30s, number one? Number two, you ask me that question next week. Zelo Pashut. Who he was, what he became, what his soul really was. Zelo Pashut. Louis Ginsberg is not the Rav, not Rabbi Belkin, or not.
He played loose with halacha.
It's not just loose with halacha. The biblical criticism, I think, was more of a problem than his approach to halacha. But it's a fascinating story, because you hear the story of Louis Ginsberg. It's like out of a Musa Sefer. Okay. Anyway, to reiterate, all right, we did today. I stand on what I said. The Sapphire scandal leaves me very sad. very depressed. On one hand, I defend Rabbi Revel. My wife disagrees with me. She's entitled to disagree. I don't say I'm correct, but I have a point of view. The commentator, which the administration of Yeshiva used to call the common traitor, the commentator played a big role in forcing Revel's hand that he had to get rid of Sapphire. They wouldn't let the... Not just the scandal. The scandal is one thing. But he would come in on Shabbos and get his tennis... How do I know that? Notes from the commentator. Come in on Shabbos and get his tennis clubs. And the students were offended. What hurts me is when you think today we would blame Iskese. See, then we thought a yeshiva, a rabbi, a rav, a Rashi yeshiva, there could never be a scandal with him. That was our mindset. That's the way I grew up. Take a look today in the year 2014, what's going on. It's frightening, it's depressing, and the worst part, it's across the board. I wish I could say, Haredim have no scandals. I wish I could say, Tziurim Datayim have no scandals. I wish I could say, YU has no scandals. We're all affected by the modern world, Ger B'Toshav Anochi Imachem, and the word surrender we have forgotten about, unfortunately. Okay. The conservative movement became very big in the yelling, the shouting, take the mechitza down, why should women be second-rate citizens? Finally, another result was Bernard Revel Graduate School, Revel in Belkin, but not just Revel in Belkin. The seminary also, to a small degree, but a definite degree, forced their hand. I just want to state, I heard from Josh Schneider, about Harry Fischel. It's amazing what you can get out of the computer. The house that I referred you to, where 12 stories are free so he could build the sukkah, is 1910 Park Avenue on the Upper East Side, and there now is one apartment available for sale. Its asking price is $12,800,000. Dollars. Rebbeinu Shalom, I repeat, one act of sales living, it shows the outlay here, you can get all the details, $12,800,000. Also, and this I knew, Josh sent me an article on Jacob Schiff, and we may mention that it may come up in class, but the Russo-Japanese War, he lent them the money so Japan could beat the hell out of Russia. He became a hero in Japan, and they say this is why they were receptive to receiving the Jews and not harming them, and afterwards passing them on to Shanghai, but not one Jew was harmed by a Japanese official. And if anyone's interested, all the information is there. Also, I just want to make one comment. Part of the question I got about Aliyah was a young person, 23, 24. Do you come on Aliyah married? Do you come on Aliyah unmarried? I have to tell you, life cannot be planned. When the Zohar says, Hakol Talui B'Mazel, what I spoke about last week, the Zohar hits the nail on the head. All I can tell you is, yes, in theory, it probably sounds better to come married. But not everyone, again, you want to find someone who wants to go in Aliyah. A young lady wrote to me, some of these boys are nibniks. I got to tell all the women listening, let me assure you, any boy you're going out with is a nibnik. He doesn't come to your shoelaces. But a smart lady has to choose a man who shows promise, and then you help develop him. And if you're smart, he doesn't even know you're developing him. And that's the way life works. But I just want to make one comment that hit me between the eyes this past Shabbat. My grandson just got engaged. Another grandson. I'm overwhelmed with grandsons getting engaged. Now I'm going to have to rob a bank, but okay, we'll manage. So I got to go to Ari Derry S for a loan from Shas, I think. So grandson just got engaged. So there'll be an engagement party. The girls had come in Aliyah from Baltimore. So there was a birthday party for my grandson, his fiancée made for him, and my wife and I were honored. We were the only people invited over the years. Everyone there were in their 20s, and we were the grandfather and grandmother, and there we are with all the young people, which was wonderful. So this was this past Shabbat. So I look around the room and I'm thinking about this question this lady had asked me about, where do you marry? And I looked around the room, the party, must have been 20 young people there. All of them Olim from the United States. I don't think one of them came married. Half of them, or 40% already, were married. They were little children. I know them through my grandson. And very fine young men and young women sitting around. So I have to tell you, we Abotech Bashem Chesed Yisovavenu. But there's no black and white answer. But thank God, good things are happening in Katamon, the new face on the block. And Baruch Hashem, they get grabbed up. I also want to show you what a dummy Rakefet is, wasting his time. One of my daughters says to me, Abba, you should write a letter to Yuli Edelstein, just became Yoshev Rosh HaKnesset, right or wrong, this is Yuli Edelstein, who I smuggled in food, brought in hundreds of thousands of dollars, don't ask him. And he knows it, he's Makat Taiva. So I write a letter to Yuli Edelstein. Ay, did I waste my time. And I assure you, I get back a beautiful, this is beautiful stationery. One of his assistants, no, tell me, Israel, lichvolt hagveret rakefet aharon. No one here has a, rakefet is a girl's first name, and it's written here, thanking in feminine form, thanking rakefet, the lady, for blessing Yuli Edelstein, and with hopes for Hatzlacha, and Yuli Edelstein with his stamped signature. So I just wanted to show you, I promised myself never to write letters again. My daughter said, right, you got to listen to your children. All right, finally, gifts. The latest Jewish action, very fascinating issue in Hurricane Sandy. I give Jewish action all the credit. And again, some people read it, they're all upset. It's all happening in America. I'm the happiest guy to see the page of Aliyah, Nefesh B'Nefesh. And thank God, I know some of these people, some of my students here, my friends. Thank God, we have the finest of the Gola is coming in Aliyah. And even though in the Gola you get jelly belly and jelly beans under the OU, go to Machne Yehuda, the candy stores, that Leben Achazi Shetov Dar Eichet. Finally, I got to show you the publication of the NCSY. If 1/10 of this is true, the NCSY is the greatest gift that the Jewish people have. I'm overwhelmed. If anyone wants, this is published in Israel. My Thomas, the editor at Board of Education. It's all the information you need to teach children about Chodesh Iyar and Sivan. Fabulous material. Once again, a dugma of the Mishnah Brura, the edited Mishnah Brura. I was born before my time. If anyone wants the Harry Fishel information, and next Sunday and Monday are the final classes for this year, do not miss them. Sunday is Reb Moshe Feinstein, Mamzei Rut. You come in and I'm Aritz, and you leave a Talmud Chacham. And next Monday, Levi Louis Ginsburg. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya. Yeah.